Welcome to Focus on Fuels, brought to you by StoneX. Your hosts are Trevor McClanahan, Risk Manager, and Alex Fodes, Director of Market Strategy from the StoneX Energy Desk. Alex and Trevor help fleet managers, fuel buyers, and energy procurement specialists gain control of fuel costs, boost margins, and keep their businesses competitive. Join them for another deep dive into the volatile energy markets.
Remember that the trading of derivatives such as futures, options, and over-the-counter products or swaps may not be suitable for all investors. Derivatives trading involves substantial risk of loss. Past results are not necessarily indicative of future results.
All right, everybody. Thanks for joining us on Focus on Fuels. I'm your host, Alex Otis.
And I'm Trevor McClanahan. Thanks for joining us again today. We had another volatile week here in front of us, so just want to provide another update. Piggybacking off of last week's interview with John Wintzel, kind of our military expert in our office, and also an oil analyst. So, how's your week been going, Alex?
Yeah, I think so. It's kind of one of those things where it's a moving target that we're all trying to keep track of right now. Just for a status update, today is April 1st, 2026. And currently, the kind of supply situation, the strait remains closed, but there are some methods that countries are kind of engaging in to kind of circumvent the strait or reducing the impact of these prices. So with the IEA's supply release, the sanctions waivers on some excess floating crude oil of Iran and Russia, as well as the east-west pipeline from Saudi Arabia, we're circumventing quite a bit of crude, but there's still a huge supply deficit. Right now, the estimates are about 6 million barrels per day of a deficit after you take into account all those kind of actions that are being placed to kind of fill that supply gap. So just to put that into perspective, that is still the total global demand of oil is around 100 million barrels per day. So there's still about 6 to 7 million barrels per day offline as we speak. And every day this progresses, it's getting worse and worse. Right now, we're kind of seeing some of the phases of the barrels that were expected to be arriving in Asia in particular were kind of the last of those barrels are arriving this week. And so right now we're kind of expecting to see a little bit of panic, but there's been actually some bearish momentum on pricing. Could you tell us a little bit about kind of what's been going on in pricing and maybe some risk to the downside that you're seeing here? I know we spoke a little bit before and you expressed a little bit of kind of downside concerns here.
Yeah, so I think the we've seen WTI fall off the last 2 days. And, you know, it hit this $105 mark where it found some resistance at. And really the new narrative or the thing that's kind of driving this a little bit lower here seems to be just that there's a good chance now or a chance that the Iran is, well, I guess President Trump could potentially exit the military, U.S. military out of the region, which would ultimately probably set up a scenario where Iran would, you know, start that toll system. Iran's publicly said that they're going to charge around 2 million barrels or $2 million per vessel that goes through there, which ends up being a dollar or two a barrel to get that product flowing into, you know, out of the strait. So ultimately that, you know, from Kuwait standpoint, from Iraq standpoint, that's a better scenario than them just simply not exporting anything. And not only that, you know, that the insurance cost that would be associated with if there were any kind of some sort of escorting system that we've kind of debunked a little bit last week with talking to John. Even if we were to start an escorting service through there, it seems that the insurance costs would be substantially more than a dollar or two a barrel there. So ultimately, I think, you know, the market's taking that toll system as maybe that's the best case scenario at this point. And, you know, I think ultimately President Trump doesn't necessarily want to do that. Israel absolutely doesn't want them to do that. Saudi Arabia has a huge stake in this too. They have ultimately the whole GCC nations, all of those nations would not be ideal for them. That would ultimately mean that Iran has got control of the region and control of the food supply, control of just about everything that goes through there. So it would almost be kind of a failure, you know, from the operational standpoint of what, you know, we are trying to accomplish throughout this entire process. So the new narrative now is potential boots on the ground at Karg Island, where I think the U.S. is looking to get some assistance from not only Israel, but the UAE and some other nations as far as troops go. We'll see how that shakes out. But if that were to be that case, that's a bullish sentiment, definitely. And it's kind of the markets right now is just seems to be weighing whether or not we're going to concede to go to that toll system, or we're going to, you know, step up the aggression and potentially put boots on the ground. So, you know, we've kind of definitely tapered back or stepped back a little bit on the oil market in the last couple of days. But I think it's at a point right now where it's, you know, looking for this, the next catalyst, and what President Trump, he's supposed to talk tonight, and tell us kind of what the plan is going forward. So I guess we'll find out a little bit more from there. But Iran has ultimately said, you know, you either concede to what we want you to do, or we are going to continue to, keep the strait closed. And, you know, all these ceasefire conversations are swirling, but there's no clear message from, really either party.
Yeah, I think it was interesting to see, and, you know, you say the best case scenario, and that's just kind of where we're at. We're not really stating that, you know, that's the optimal outcome, but just kind of weighing the options of, you know, boots on the ground versus installing this toll system and kind of, you know, calling a truce, whether how that can be spun in, you know, it will definitely try to be spun in a way of, you know, we, you know, both sides are going to try and get something out of this. And so that tells me that it might not be a simple agreement here. And I think right now we're seeing some countries kind of step up to Iran and kind of negotiating their own tolls. And so that might alleviate some pressure. Just to put that into perspective, there's a lot of noise on that. There's still only been a handful of shifts that have been allowed through here. A lot of it has been kind of humanitarian aid towards India for LPG supplies. So I think that's definitely a price risk to the downside. But in my mind, I see almost more price risk to the upside from the fact that any additional attacks on oil infrastructure, in particular the East-West pipeline or the Yanbu port, would immediately remove quite a bit of oil from the market. That's already so. As we have been kind of looking at these supplies, the loadings were up to almost 6 million barrels per day in the Yanbu port a couple weeks back. Whether that can be sustained is another thing, but I mean, just to put that into perspective, if you knock that 6 million barrels offline, or 5 million barrels, 4 million barrels, that's a huge amount. And where that would be coming at a time where these buyers are seem to be scrambling even more so. So it seems like a lot of the countries initially, you know, they're trying to reduce run rates. They don't know how long this thing is going to last. They don't want to get too aggressive initially early on, but once you start seeing your stocks draw down aggressively, more so than they have, and then you're starting to bid on the market, it's going to start to go upon itself. So until the downside risk, if there's an agreement between the U.S. and Iran, and whether that's a toll system or just complete peace, which I don't foresee, those are really the downside risks. But right now, it's hard for me to have any it's hard for me to have those downside risks outweigh any of the upside risks. But I mean, it's something that will definitely have to be in kind of that wait and see mode. We also were approaching kind of that $100 per barrel mark in WTI. And that was kind of another form of psychological resistance as well. It was passed, I guess last week. So, in my mind, I thought it was going to be kind of supported there, but now we've kind of gone back down on the other side of it. So it might take a headline to push that up higher. Another thing that I thought was really interesting was, so the past several days we had seen kind of equities rallying. And so this came on the heels of the announcement that Iran was willing to negotiate, but really it was a very vague statement. It was like,
and it's Iran, fighting president.
Yes. And it was about, you know, we would be willing to negotiate, if all our terms are met, which, to me is not something to completely sell off the market. But one thing that I had read about, and kind of looked at was the interest rate response. And our interest rate team here kind of had a nice write-up about that regarding that perhaps the market is actually pricing in a prolonged war and thus a decline in global growth of the economy and thus the expectations for lower interest rates ahead. So it was almost kind of one of those things. The things when I get into interest rates is, you know, this is obviously not my expertise, but the things that I find funny is sometimes bad news is almost good news to some degree, because, you know, if you're reducing interest rates, it's supposed to be supportive of the economy. So it was interesting to see that in the fact that perhaps the market is pricing in the fact that this is going to be more of a sustained disruption. And I think that in our opinion, we had been kind of thinking this would extend quite a bit, and that it's not going to end immediately. And I think that the pricing in the oil markets right now, I still think there's kind of value in Q2, almost across the board, because I think that even if the strait opened tomorrow, I think it would still take some time before everything normalized. Even if this was a toll situation, I don't know where your thoughts are on that, but I think, what are your kind of strategies going forward on across the board?
Yeah.
It's hard to say value when prices are near their 99th percentile, over the past 5 years, but, you know what I mean when I'm saying value, I guess that, perhaps things aren't being quite as priced in the second quarter.
I mean, I think that what you talked about with the interest rate market, that's actually key. And we talked about that last week with, you know, President Trump paying a lot of attention to the bond market. And that's actually kind of a little bit of a stronger forecast of what, you know, his thought process could be going forward. So, you know, weakening interest rates could mean that ultimately, you know, the market's pricing that in and potentially this is that might be a little bit more of a stronger forecast of a prolonged conflict than we expect. The administration currently has continuously said this is going to, you know, we're going to unwind this in 2 or 3 weeks, and there will be, you know, the war will be over. We heard this in Iraq too, early 2000s. That was a lot of the narrative as well. And I just think that, you know, history might not repeat itself, but it sure does rhyme, right? So it's one of those scenarios where I think that it's definitely not going to just end in 2 to 3 weeks. There's going to be some residual effects of this, whether or not the U.S. is kind of out of the strait, or, you know, out of the Gulf there, then potentially that could alleviate some of this this upward pressure that we're seeing. And like you said, you know, that there's going to be separate deals for each separate country if there is some sort of pull system. But, you know, pointing out what you said with, I think it's good to, for us to look at like what the boots on the ground scenario would look like, and then also what the toll system would look like. Boots on the ground is, I mean, to me, that is when Iran's going to start hitting those export facilities and, critical infrastructure, and all these GCC nations. So the East to West pipeline is going to be significantly more at harm and in harm's way. If that's the case, there's a lot of pipeline for them to be able to attack, and then not only that, the export facility as well. So it's kind of a little bit of a sitting duck there. And then also, if you got, I don't see a scenario where U.S. troops being in Iran would, you know, they seem to be like that would be a sitting duck situation as well. So I ultimately don't, if that is the case, that we actually do bring boots to the ground here, there is a lot more upside in this oil market. The IEA also relieved, what was it, 400,000 or 400 million barrels of SPR, correct? So if that 6 million barrels per day is accurate, you know, if that's the what is going to be, you know, the deficit going forward for the next couple months, that's about 6 months worth of supply. Once that is gone, there's not much more to crack into, right? I mean, there could be, it could continue to alleviate more SPR barrels, but at that point, you know, countries are going to be leaving themselves exposed in an event of a wartime situation. So I think that ultimately there's so much risk to the upside. There's just a lot of risk in both directions, unfortunately, right now. The market is giving us a lot of backwardation, which is nice. But again, it's you got to value that accordingly. So, you know, from the front month right now, you can actually go buy a diesel contract for around 34 cents cheaper than you can for just the month out. So, you know, an April delivery right now is trading around 406 the New York Harbor, and then, you know, the June contract for May delivery is trading at 372. So big gap there, and you know that's kind of this. And again, I want to reiterate the fact that that is not any kind of insight on a forecast of what the market's going to do next. It's just saying, you know, we are at a significant deficit globally on diesel supplies. And, you know, it just keeps stair-stepping itself down as you go further out. July contract for June delivery is trading at 343. So you've got, you know, almost 60 cents or 63 cents of value from just 2 months out. So, yeah, that to me, it still makes sense. I would at least take, if I were exposed to this in my everyday business, you know, I would at least take 25 to 50% of my fuel usage and go lock that in. And that might come back to bite if this all the dust settles on this. But my perspective is it's really hard for me to paint a picture where that actually happens in the next 2 months. It just doesn't, I don't really see that happening. And it could, but it's just very unlikely. So, you know, that the time value of that is the most attractive part of it. I definitely wouldn't go out to the fall right now and go lock in a bunch of gallons. If you're going to maybe do 20, 25%. The good thing about this market is the nearby spread is just so much cheaper than the front month that it allows you to really just pick up a lot of gallons for a lot cheaper if you just look, you know, very, very near term. So there's still just a ton of upside to this market. I don't want people to forget about, you know, the previous forecast for a lot of analysts when the strait gets closed is WTI at $150. We're at $100. Now, I'm not saying we're going to get there, and it could, and it's going to take a while for this strait to be closed in order for us to get that there. But if boots are on the ground, I think that's where we're headed.
Yeah, I think the boots on the ground situation is kind of a little bit of both, because I do think perhaps that might be one of the, I don't want to say most likely scenarios to open up the strait, but I think John kind of alluded to it last week that perhaps, you know, taking it by force might be one of the only options if, you know, peace and the toll system are off the table. So ultimately, I think initially we would see a huge spike in prices, because if they're, you know, taking over Karg Island, if any exports are disrupted there, Iran's one of the suppliers that are still able to export barrels right now. So if they shut down Karg Island, which accounts for 90% of their exports, I think that's a big price spike. And like you said, perhaps Iran's kind of kept the east-west pipeline in its back pocket. So, you know, if things are, if they're even more desperate than they are now, perhaps they'll attack that. So I think I'm with you. You could see a temporary spike there. And then however long that military effort would take to open up the strait. I mean, once, if the strait is opened, then you got to get the buy-in from the ship owners and insurance providers that it actually is safe. Are you going to take you know, the word for it if you're still seeing every now and then that alone there's a lone person that's shooting a drone to the street? So I mean, there's still plenty of risk, and there's going to be kind of a delay there. And I think I'm with you that this is going to be prolonged more so than initially thought. And that's probably where the value is. I think there is plenty of downside risk. If the war ended tomorrow, the headlines would respond. WTI would fall off substantially. But I just think that we are still going to be somewhat supported. Even if the war ended tomorrow, I could see WTI still at that $80 per barrel for 3 months at least. And that's just to say that, kind of comparing that to prior from the war where we were at $60 per barrel WTI. So I think it is prudent to kind of look at fixing some of those diesel costs. Diesel is kind of the more sensitive product here. And then kind of looking back to just to put it into perspective, we did some analysis on kind of where flows were prior to, and today I'm putting together our report on our global crude oil flow tracker, and we're kind of quantifying what the big drop in crude oil barrels was. But in addition to that, we found that the diesel flow disruption has been about 500,000 barrels per day from February to March. So, I mean, that's 2% of global supply. So diesel had already been in kind of a precarious position before this. And then now we're seeing this exacerbated. And that's why you've seen refining margins on diesel go to historic levels right now. And it's telling you that there's just a massive shortage of diesel. And without these medium sour barrels from the Middle East, what could happen and what will happen if this is prolonged? Asia gonna start turning down more of their refineries, produce even less diesel. Because right now, if you actually look at kind of our high frequency inventories globally, in the US, in Europe, and in Singapore, we still haven't really seen the inventory drawdowns quite yet. I do think that the US will be probably the last to start to feel it. But you're going to see it in Asia, in Singapore inventories specifically. We should expect to see more drawdowns here very soon. So in my mind, it's a lot of the pricing of the market is about like where we're anticipating everything. And we haven't really seen that actual tightness outside of a few areas of products. And that's why kind of diesel led the way in this huge thing in the first rallies. And then now crude's kind of paving the way as well. And I think you're seeing just spreads rally as well. And a lot of this, just for those of you that'd like to kind of read in more about this, we will have some links to our market research in the notes, and we can dive into, you can look at kind of where the high frequency inventories are at, the flows of crude oil specifically from each country, who's benefiting in this, who's benefiting the most and who's hurting the most, really. One of the big things we've seen recently was kind of some of the Latin American producers. So Brazil and Russia are all kind of benefiting from this. So, because they have that similar grade of crude that's in very, very short supply. But really, just to go back to the tightness of inventories, we, and this is reflected in basis markets domestically. So I know you were kind of stating, you know, it's there still could be some value in some of your diesel usage in, you know, the next couple months. But right now that's not looking super attractive because of the basis markets domestically. And so, you know, particularly in the Midwest, Chicago area, we've seen it extremely soft. How we think this is going to go is going to be, you're going to start to feel it more in the Gulf Coast because that's where the barrels are kind of flowing from. The Northeast is definitely feeling is tight. And that's just kind of been at a structural tightness over the past several years after that, the Philadelphia refinery went down. I believe that was 4 years ago. So they're kind of constantly in a little bit tighter in the U.S. So I think you're going to start to see Gulf Coast basis start to tick up, start to strengthen, before it kind of hits the rest of the U.S. But again, that's going to be kind of the, one of the last pieces of the, probably in the world, that's going to start to feel the real effects of this oil price market right now.
Yeah. I mean, in any export, any market that has the ability to export barrels is going to see these spikes. They're going to feel the effects of these massive spikes that the futures are actually trading at. You know, like you said, everything that's with in the Midwest is pretty much landlocked. There are pipelines that you know, that send these products to export markets, but there's just not enough to where it's going to make a huge dent. So Midwesterners have not really felt the significant effects that the rest of the country has on the coastlines. But you know, that could change quickly. And I think that, you know, there's arbitrage opportunities. So nobody's really figured it out yet, including us, as far as how you can get those barrels south and to where you can, I mean, the arbitrage is wide open for those guys to make significant margin. It's probably going to take a lot of rail that's going to do the majority of that, the brunt of it. And then some barges and things like that. But yeah, the pipeline infrastructure is just not really set up to move barrels south. It's pretty rare for there to be a long-term discount in the Midwest for anybody to really invest in that, right? So I do think that I've seen, you know, on with my accounts in the Midwest, all these fuel distributors that are offering forward contracts have discounted their forward contracts significantly in light of all this, you know, cheap price fuel that's in the Midwest. But that being said, still not going to be quite as cheap as what you can go get a spot barrel for with this backwardation that we're, you know, witnessing right now. We're talking about it over, you know, from the New York Harbor standpoint, or really even the Gulf Coast, kind of depends on how you look at it. But at the end of the day, the group or Midwest guys are not going to see a discount more than likely. If you go buy a summer strip, you know, for compared to what you can go get a spot barrel for. What I do think though is ag demand is getting ready to start if it hasn't already. And that's already, we've already seen basis markets increased quite a bit. So Midwest diesel is already on the rise, and tightening the spread between, you know, the heating oil, the diesel futures, and, you know, the spot gallon. So I do think that, you know, once that start, that spread even tightens more, that might wake up people to consider locking in. But if you are an end user, and you do want to, hedge some of your risk here, it's probably a good idea to do, to look at doing some, at least for the summer. Even if you're in the Midwest and you can get cheaper barrels right now, that might not last through the summer. And I don't, you know, it's hard to say whether or not we'll see that, but most of the time we'll see an uptick in basis just seasonally, you know, for, in April, especially, in the Midwest, ag demand, right? Construction even starts, right? Most construction companies aren't really hitting the ground hard until the weather turns over. So just expect that. Know that that's here to come. And then you can also hedge some of that with your jobbers, or if you're a larger end user, you can give us a ring and we can help you guys out with managing your price risk throughout this year. So I really just think that there's still plenty of upside here. And it depends on kind of, it really, I hate to say this, but it kind of depends on your perspective on what's going to happen. Because quite frankly, you and I don't know what's going to happen next. We're not in the president's mind. We're not in Netanyahu's mind. We're not in Iran's leadership's mind. So I think that there's still quite a bit of upside. I've kind of been wishy-washy, especially today, because at first, when I was looking at this, I thought the toll system seems like the quickest way to, you know, end this conflict, and it seemed like the easiest off ramp. But that would mean that, I kind of hate to say this, but I think that would be the U.S. kind of conceding and saying, "Hey, this is our best outcome, even though it's not the one we want." But we need the global economy to recover here before we send this thing into a worse scenario. So that's my perspective. I think there's more upside here. I don't know how long it's going to last, but if you think that there's a good chance the boots are going to be on the ground in the Middle East from the US and others, in Iran, there's going to be more upside most likely. So that leaves a lot more energy infrastructure exposed. And I would definitely consider a risk management plan if that's the case.
I would say one thing, and like Trevor, you're stating here, we don't really know what's going to go on. Our job is to try and look at all the possible outcomes and then kind of weigh our probabilities here. But just to put it into perspective, about the boots on the ground, I like to look at some of the kind of odds markets to kind of show what everybody's thinking. And just to put this into perspective, as of March 30th, the will the U.S. invade Iran before 2027 was 68% chance at March 30th, so 2 days ago. That's what people are thinking, that yes, there will be an invasion. Just to put that into perspective, prior to this whole scenario, it was around 20% at the start in March, and now up to 68%. And so, I mean, the likelihood of this happening is increasing in the people's minds. So thus, you know, you're going to see that reflected in market prices as well. I think using these poly markets, obviously, as kind of a gauge of what the market is perceiving, is kind of the way to do it, as opposed to thinking, you know, this is the most likely outcome, right? So again, that doesn't mean there's a 68% chance that this is going to happen, but if the market thinks that is the case, then perhaps that's what the market's going to, you know, price in. But I think we've kind of gone back and forth over the possible outcomes right here, the woulda, coulda, shoulda, if games going forward. And that's what we got to constantly do, honestly. But I think we try to tie ourselves back to data as much as we possibly can, and not really make any subjective decisions or statements. Obviously, sometimes you kind of got to choose one way or the other, but hopefully we're kind of hitting the mark on that, and that we're kind of, you know, utilizing data as best as we can, and kind of trying to keep all of our listeners updated on possible outcomes and how to position accordingly. But I think that'll kind of be all for today. Again, check the show notes to kind of look at our market intelligence offerings. Again, if you're an end user, anybody that has exposure to any crude or crude oil or refined product, reach out to us. We can kind of point you in the right direction and hopefully help you out there. But thanks for your time, everybody. Thanks, Trevor.
Thanks, guys.
You've been listening to the Focus on Fuels podcast with Trevor McClanahan and Alex Hodes, brought to you by StoneX, NASDAQ ticker SNEX, a global Fortune 100 financial services company with a century of commodities risk management experience. Subscribe to Focus on Fuels on your preferred podcasting platform. For insights on managing fuel and energy price volatility, and to sign up for the free StoneX Morning Energy Brief newsletter, email focusonfuels@stonex.com or visit www.stonex.com. Please feel free to rate, review, and share this episode with colleagues. Until next time.